And now, HarvardNet, Part 2. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who are helping me get out of debt. So I was working for HarvardNet for about a year. It was a weird place to be because, like I said before, it was exciting, dynamic, full of a variety of puzzles and triumphs and tragedies, but also inherently fraudulent. I realized that I couldn't stay there, and I started to look around, and help came in the most unlikely of places. The previous company where I had been working had undergone some changes and been sold from one company to another in a way that made it that it was suddenly flush with cash and going to be the toehold of this company's Northeast strategy. They needed people back, and one of my coworkers had become a manager in the time since and was looking around for talent and realized maybe it was time to reverse poach some of the people who had worked there previously. He came to me, told me that they would be interested in working with me, and I told him, well, I would have to have quite a raise to come back, and he got it. He, in fact, got me an offer of a six-figure salary. Wow! Going from $65,000 a year to $100,000 in just 300 days? Well, I had other reasons for leaving, but that was one heck of a sweet reward. So I accepted that very generous offer, and I looked forward to moving on. So I resigned from HarvardNet and gave them my 2 weeks' notice and explained that I had a really great offer from my old company and I wanted to go back there. And it was accepted with much aplomb. But even by that period, things were somehow, amazingly, getting even darker at HarvardNet. More people had come in, territory was being marked off, and there were office politics, the likes of which, I don't know, I hadn't experienced before. There were active attempts to discredit me. I was asked, could I give a couple people technical information about what I was doing? And I certainly sat down with those folks and said that, you know, here's how this works, here's how this works. They took notes and they went off. And a manager that had been put in above my manager, Brian, sent me an email in which he said, hey, Jason, if you could continue to do that education of your replacements, that would be really appreciated. And he made one simple fatal mistake. He included the letter that had inspired him to write the letter. This was a letter from someone in the office named Andreas, who was building up quite a power structure within the company. And in it, Andreas said a bunch of things about me that just weren't true. He indicated that I was actively hoarding information, that I was trying to take over and control things, and that I was refusing to meet with his people. All of them lies. And I should have just let it go. But at the time, it was new enough to me that I thought, that's not right. I've got to stand up for myself. So I started to write a letter back to this manager and talked about how Andreas wasn't being very fair to me, and this is what I was doing, but also some thoughts about why HarvardNet hadn't really come together. And as I wrote this, I realized, you know, I'm going to send this back to the manager. He's going to glance over it and he's going to delete it. I think the entire company needs to read this. And I knew the addresses for sending to everybody in the company. And so, yeah, I wrote one of those letters, one of those legendary creations where you just let a company have it. I didn't say that they were breaking the law. I'm not that silly, but I definitely talked about how many problems were inherent in the model that HarvardNet had chosen to take, and how this one specific guy was, you know, needlessly backstabbing for a leaving employee, and what did that indicate about what power structures existed at the company. And I went on and on and on. And then I made the second big mistake, which was to press send. So I'd sent it in the evening, about a week and a half before I was to leave the company. And I thought to myself, I don't think they're going to fire me on the spot, but it's a weird place. Maybe they are. So I drove down to the company and took all the things out of my desk, put them into a box, and drove them home, just in case. So I wandered in the next day, immediately called into a meeting, and they said, yeah, about that letter. And I said, yeah, great letter, huh? And they said, yeah, we're not going to fire you, but you don't need to come in for the rest of the weeks. And I said, okay. And I went out without the box of sadness, high-fived a bunch of people, said goodbye to the friends, gave out hugs and love, and then went home. And I contacted my boss at the other company and said, hey, Mark, I'm ready to go, man. And he said, you know, I'd love to have you start now, but we don't have everything in place. So how about if we start you, but you don't have to come in for a week? So for 1 week in my career, I was getting two paychecks for doing nothing. Now, this all should be the pleasant humble brag of a person who has then gone on to squander all of his money, and in some ways it is. But one of the things that happened after I went back to my old company, which had now been renamed and was part of a startup out of Hawaii, was I started to get stories from other HarvardNet people, both there and having left, about all sorts of weird choices and malfeasance and strange activities going on. And I just couldn't help myself. I couldn't help myself. And I registered HarvardNetSucks.com. And using a proto self-written blogging software, I started to post stories of things going on and gossip and giving out shout outs to people and just being a little bit of a rabble rouser. You know, within a month, the company had blocked directly by IP the ability to read the HarvardNet Sucks page. And as a result, the tip line just blew up as people mailed me all sorts of fun, hot, gossipy tips. To be frank, it was just somebody who was full of themselves, talking a little bit too much online, and just being a rabble-rousing jerk. I totally admit this. There's nothing in any of what I was doing that was necessary. I mean, HarvardNet was an unethical company, but I don't know how much I was doing other than providing a kind of self-echo chamber to employees to make them feel that they had done something. I mean, instead of standing up to their bosses, they were sending tips to a website, and that website was dutifully printing them as fact. And it was all, to be honest, a simple little dumb hobby. And it was pretty much on the way out until the subpoena came. My wife opened the door of our apartment, and a man served her a process summons, and as we read the summons, I realized this wasn't just something like a cease and desist. This wasn't some angry letter. This was, in every way, me being sued for $120,000 by HarvardNet. They claimed that I had used my knowledge as a Unix administrator to break into all of their systems, and that insider knowledge was allowing me to do all sorts of damage to the company. And so they were suing me for all sorts of damage and destruction that, frankly, didn't exist and which I hadn't done. This is what's known as a slap lawsuit. It was designed to shut me up, to make me go away, and even as a little bonus, to maybe destroy me, to cause me to be financially burdened, to the point of being, in some way, humbled and, if not broke, broken. Now, I've given a talk about this. It's a DEF CON tape called So You Got Your Lame Ass Sued, A Narrative, and it's under the name of The Defendant. That was the code name I used. So it's not always easy to find because you can't look for my name. And I go into detail of it right around the time of that lawsuit. My language is definitely different in that video. But just to explain, there was probably no chance I was going to be able to fight this. I mean, I was in the right. It was definitely a free speech issue. But how was I going to come up with any sort of money to hire a lawyer and come up against Hale and Dorr, one of the most powerful legal firms in the world, and try my very best to plead my case? Well, help came from an unexpected quarter. You see, HarvardNet had screwed over quite a few people, including one of their managers named Vinny Bono. And Vinny had landed on his feet and was going on to other things and was a fellow of means. And Vinny, well, Vinny ran on a slow burn. And when word got to him that I was being sued by the company that had screwed him over and pushed him out, he came to me and he contacted me and he said, "Hey, I heard you're being sued. And are you thinking of settling?" And I said, "Yeah, kinda." And he said, yeah, don't settle. I'm going to get you a lawyer. I'm going to pay all of your legal bills until you are exonerated." It's 18 years later, and I can still remember how I felt when Vinny came out of the sky, this angel of vindictiveness, and said he had my back to the end. Vinny kept to his word. He got me a lawyer. Her name was and is Lucy Lovrian, and Lucy sat down with me, went over all of the pieces, got us in touch with some networking experts and people who could testify one way or another involving this case, and started to build a response. And meanwhile, I went on with my day job, knowing that as bills racked up, I could not think about it and focus on my new old job, a priceless gift from Vinny. Now, it turned out that, yeah, HarvardNet was in fact doing their best to squash me, especially in light of some of the things I may or may not have known about how the company had set itself up. And there were people on the board of HarvardNet who had hopped in to make a quick buck, people from places like Fidelity Investments and the Boston Globe, who had hosting at HarvardNet with the intention of puffing it up as the kind of place that would take their august institutions and be able to work well with them, and who were very unhappy that somebody would be affecting their reputation as a person running HarvardNetSucks.com might be. And this is a technical audience I'm talking to. Their fundamental argument was this. On the HarvardNetSucks.com site, when word got out to me that people within HarvardNet couldn't reach me, I noticed in our logs that there was a specific IP address that was connecting to us up to the day that it wasn't, and it had never connected again, and I announced that IP and said, "Oh, that's crazy that IP address has no longer gotten any connections to me. Maybe it's the HarvardNet company." And it was. It was their bridging system, but I didn't know that. And Harvard claimed that by printing the IP address of their proxy server, I had destroyed it. And so $120,000 was to replace all of the network infrastructure involved in the maintenance of that machine. Sounds as stupid as it is, but try to imagine explaining that to a judge who is near retirement with the best technical experts you can, who are doing their darndest to explain it in the most simple way, while a Hale and Dorr lawyer explains it in the most muddying, weird, accusatory way. It was not enjoyable at all. So Several rounds of this went back and forth, and along the way, I got an opportunity to do an interview. And there was a columnist who did technology at the Boston Globe, and he contacted me, and we talked about this. And he ended up writing an article about HarvardNet working to silence its critics. And the article was hosted at the Boston Globe, and therefore hosted at HarvardNet. Within about a week, Hailendoor dropped the case, totally left it on the ground. And people hear about that and they say, so you won. But in point of fact, it had cost $19,000 for all the legal and related fees. Again, this was something Vinnie Bono paid, and I will always thank Vinnie forever for reaching out like that. He was the one who paid that money, who covered it, threw it out there, and Vinny knew that that was a defense best served cold. I kept HarvardNetSucks.com up a while after that, but, you know, it was always a weird little lark. It wasn't about being some sort of crusader. It was just a weird little response to a dumb company. But somehow, in that moment, I had learned that there were some pretty dark paths things could go down if I didn't watch it. And I understood the fear that people have when they talk about legal trouble and getting into court and being approached about all sorts of accusations that you have to spend inordinate amounts of cash defending. I learned a lot of things from that case. But I also learned something that was the most important thing of all. Never, never let them shut you up. This is Jason Scott. You've been listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Sam Johnston, Adam Green, and the hundreds of other supporters who have been helping me get out of debt. A little tone shift for my previous episodes, but I thought I would share that story because it really was formative to me, and it taught me a lot both about the legal system, but before that, it also taught me how truly arbitrary a lot of the engineering we take for granted really is. I mean, I'm sure HarvardNet was a particularly bad ISP, but I can imagine how many networks and machines and data centers must have run at the time, while we also promised the moon and the stars. And ever since then, I've actually had a real fascination at seeing the place behind the marketing. You know, places like Atari and Sega and IBM and Digital and Rand Corporation, you know, seeing the actual building, the place that is being portrayed in the extensive marketing and image building, and then comparing it to what really was. I think it's made me a more understanding and educated person because I've wanted to understand where things really stand and not just what they were promised. We are a very, very performative species. We can put on a show to beat all other shows. And as I went through all the stresses of that lawsuit, it really helped me understand the bedrock of my character, how far I could be pushed, balancing the needs of my home life with doing the right thing. And during that case, there was one event that stuck with me more than anything else has to the present day. My manager, his full name is Brian Durkin, testified on my behalf in the lawsuit. Again, Brian, my manager of the company that had fired me, testified on my behalf. He indicated they were lying. He indicated that there was no way the damage could be what it was, and that it was very unlikely I had any sort of insider knowledge. He stabbed that lawsuit in the back, and was probably the biggest blow that caused the lawsuit to be dropped and for me to be exonerated. He came into the office after that came out in court, and his manager, with tears in his eyes, fired Brian on the spot. Brian was married. He had children, and he stood up for me to do the right thing at the end. I can count on the fingers of one hand the amount of times I've ever seen that level of bravery in real life before me. Now, his wife was angry. I mean, super angry. I was not allowed to visit, and I definitely did not stay in Brian's life. His family was basically, why did you do it for that punk? And just let me know that I should count my lucky stars and stay the hell away. And so I've only talked to Brian a handful of times, but each and every time I afford him the massive amount of respect I have for standing that close to his principles. And I hope, in some small echo, that some things I have done in the 18 years hence have in any way measured near it. Thank you again, Brian.